Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings on our special Thanksgiving Day episode of Faith Radio Mornings, where we have some best of segments that we're airing from some of our regular guests that have joined us and talked about different dimensions of the Thanksgiving Day holiday. I'm mindful here at Hour 2 that we are not the only country in the world that celebrates Thanksgiving. Here in the United States, our neighbors to the north in Canada, where we do have a listening audience, also do celebrate Thanksgiving, and it happens actually on October 14th, so a little over a month ago, Thanksgiving was celebrated in Canada. And it sounds like the Canadians actually have dibs on Thanksgiving. The first Thanksgiving in Canada was about 40 years prior to when it was first celebrated in the United States. And in the Canadian Thanksgiving, it is a celebration of a safe return home from some English explorers that had gone through the treacherous Northwest Passage and had arrived home safely, and they gave thanks for the safe passage as far as that goes. But it does sound like there's been some fighting back and forth in history between the United States and Canada about what constitutes a proper Thanksgiving, whether safe passage is a good Thanksgiving, or whether we should be grateful for the bountiful harvest, which really does characterize American Thanksgiving. I would suggest either way that both the people of North America and Canada and in the United States can celebrate thanks for safety, for good harvest and bountiful food. It's a really fun holiday to celebrate together. We've got a great next hour ahead. We're going to be joined first by historian Jonathan Den Hartog, who's going to tell us a little bit about the history of Thanksgiving here in the United States of America. And then we'll be joined by Robert Dickey, who's going to give us some really good financial advice about how we can monitor our spending habits post-Thanksgiving, when we head into the Black Friday weekend and into Cyber Monday, and think about what we can do on a budget and making sure we don't go too deeply in debt. So it should be a great hour or two here next on Faith Radio Mornings. Faith Radio Mornings, and delighted to be joined in studio by Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog, who's a professor of history, the chair of history here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and has joined us pretty regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings to just talk about different dimensions of political history. And now in this case, we're going to talk a little bit about holiday history with Thanksgiving fast approaching. We wanted to have Jonathan in to give us a little sense of the history of Thanksgiving. Good morning, Jonathan.
Well, good morning. Once again, it's excellent to be here and be in studio.
Well, I love having you in studio like this, and I have to admit that beyond, you know, the pilgrims showing up and having some sort of dinner with the original Americans, I really know nothing about the history of Thanksgiving. So if I showed up at that first Thanksgiving Day table, would it be green bean casserole? Would it be sweet potatoes and marshmallows? What would I have experienced back then?
First of all, you may be showing up expected or unexpected. There's actually some suggestion that maybe when the Native Americans came, they just showed up. That there wasn't even a formal invite, but they thought this would be a good chance to get together. So you may have been expected, you may not have been expected. One of the key dishes from the first Thanksgiving was actually eel.
Eel.
So I don't know if you have a real good eel recipe to share, but of course they were right on the Atlantic Ocean, and eel was easy to obtain both on the mud flats around Plymouth and in the rivers. So eel was a prominent piece. They called wild birds the fowl, F-O-W-L.
Yeah.
We don't know that there were turkey. Turkey were usually pretty hard to catch, but there may have been some wild bird on the table as well.
I find that fascinating. I mean, I love my sushi, like the nice guy, you know, in terms of unagi is the eel. Mm-hmm. I would have never imagined that there would ever be a Thanksgiving Day table with sushi on it.
Well, just suggest to the pilgrims to add some rice and some seaweed, wrap it up, and you're all good.
I love it. Okay, so the rough time frame? When did this happen again? Remind our listeners, remind me, and sort of what began to unfold as a result of this gathering?
Right. Well, the key dates that people usually point to, 1620 is the year that the pilgrims came over from England. And, of course, there's a whole backstory as to why they're on the Mayflower by themselves as this one group coming over to America. It actually has to do with their desire for religious liberty and economic opportunity tied together. So there's an interesting story there. 1620, they were going to be on two ships. The other ship sprung a leak, so they're all crammed aboard the Mayflower. Before they even get off, they have to sign the Mayflower Compact, which is an agreement for self-government amongst themselves. And then they get off the boat in late fall of 1620. Now, I love New England, but that's not the most hospitable time, right? It's cold. It's rainy. And they have to start their colony from scratch at the worst possible time of the season. But they do. That first winter is very rough. They call it a suffering time, a sick time. There were times when there were only seven people who were healthy enough to make sure that everything ran. Other people were sick with the climate, with new world diseases. So it was a very difficult time that first winter. The spring comes. They don't know what's going to happen when they have some encounters with remarkably Native Americans who actually speak English.
Hmm.
And to that point, they're amazed because they didn't even know how they would interact with the natives. It turns out that the first person to make contact was an Indian named Samoset. And Samoset had learned English from various travelers. And so he was able to be a go-between with the nearby tribes. In fact, he walked into the settlement and said, "Welcome, Englishmen." And I think they were just blown away by that. So Samoset is there to help. One of his associates is named Squanto. Squanto also speaks English. Squanto knows how to raise crops and deal with the wildlife, including the eel in the New World. And so he's helping them. And so then by the fall of 1621, when they bring the harvest in, is often seen as the first Thanksgiving. And, you know, this is debated. It's not as kind of clear as we've built it up over the years. But they were clearly having a harvest festival and giving thanks to God in the fall of 1621.
Was there really a different sort of religious mindset between the two traditions? However, I would assume that the Native Americans had a very different perception of God than maybe the Western European Christians would have had, and yet they shared sort of this gratefulness back and forth. Would that be fair to say?
Well, they're definitely sharing the meal, and they share contests. There were apparently foot races and maybe some shooting displays. So there were athletic contests even on Thanksgiving Day in 1621.
This is brilliant. I mean, this is way better than just sitting and having a meal watching football.
That's
I mean,
right.
We could actually have almost like a Highland Games or something.
That's
on
right.
Thanksgiving.
This is the active going out and doing it yourself, not just eating and then falling asleep with the turkey in front of the TV. So they were actively involved, but we know that these separatists, pilgrims who were also Protestants, definitely believed the scriptures. They would have come from an English background where harvest festivals were common, right? This is a good thing to celebrate. But they would have done it not necessarily as a church celebration, but nevertheless as a Christian celebration, giving thanks to God. So I think they really had that mindset that it was God and God who had providentially brought them, protected them, and then given them this harvest.
So did it happen on a Thursday, or did Thursday come later in this deal in terms of when we're celebrating this?
Yeah, we don't exactly know when this happened, except that it was the fall of 1621. There's another Thanksgiving recorded in 1623, but it's not set on a Thursday until the 1860s, actually.
And you're referencing, you said earlier, that the pilgrims are coming from a situation in which they were experiencing not the best circumstances related to economic and religious opportunity. So give us a little sense of the background that even provides a bit of the context for the importance of this meal.
Right. So if you take several steps back, remember, in the wake of the Protestant Reformation and Martin Luther that we just celebrated a few weeks ago, England had developed its own Protestant church, the Church of England, but these were Protestants in England, so they agreed with that point, but they thought the church had not reformed enough. It was not as in line with the scriptures as they hoped it would be. And so even though they were still Protestants, they deemed the need to separate from the Church of England to have a more pure, more biblical church. But in England, that itself was illegal. And so these separatists were being persecuted, had been persecuted, had spent time in prison, had faced fines for even being on the Protestant side of them things. So they said, what are we going to do about this? This group had themselves then become immigrants. They had left England to go to the Netherlands. The Netherlands at the time was a place where there was a lot of religious liberty. You could practice your faith fine. And they did, and they appreciated that. But they said, even as we're free to worship, we find that there are many other pieces that we are not appreciating about the Netherlands. We don't have good economic opportunities. Because we're immigrants, we have very few jobs that are open to us. People are getting worn down by manual labor. And we're also a little bit concerned about the culture. We're not sure about how our families are developing. And so for all of these reasons, they said, we believe it's God's leading to go to this new world. Even though it's a wilderness, they thought that was a better option.
That's a fascinating backstory to that, and it speaks to the importance of hospitality. And we'll take a short break, Doctor, and when we come back, we'd love to talk about it almost feels like a role reversal in the sense that it was the white Western Europeans that needed to be the recipients of hospitality in an immigration situation. So we'll get into more about the history and what we can expect to look forward to at Thanksgiving on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. Having a fun conversation with Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog about the history of Thanksgiving a little bit as we anticipate celebrating it next week as a country. And I'm just curious, when Thanksgiving hits for you next week, what are you going to look for that has to be on the Thanksgiving Day table? Otherwise, it just simply isn't Thanksgiving.
Ironically, for me, I think of the green bean casserole as
a
typical Midwestern, and I understand it's a Minnesota, it's an Iowa tradition, and so I really associate that with Thanksgiving celebration, along with my turkey, my potatoes, and my gravy.
Yeah,
but I'm going to put some green bean casserole there.
See, I never had the green bean casserole growing up. It was all about mashed potatoes and then mixing the corn in with the mashed potatoes. That little blend together, that was Thanksgiving Day, but my wife is English, and it was sweet potatoes with marshmallows on top. I'd never heard of that. That seems like a dessert kind of thing.
I don't know. We definitely have the sweet potatoes as well. So it's multiple textures going on there. We really appreciate it.
Well, before the break, we were talking a little bit about just almost this role reversal kind of idea that you see these white Western Europeans show up on the shores of a foreign country, and they're greeted by the Native Americans, and there is an incredible form of hospitality being extended at this moment.
Right, and I think that that's really useful to think about, that these pilgrims have very little when they're coming, right? We should think they're traveling in search of a better life, and it is the help of, as we said, Squanto and Samoset that really helped them get established, and then to create working relationships with the nearby tribe. It was actually the Wampanoag tribe under Chief Massasoit, and they were able to establish a good living relationships for the next several decades that not perfect, but workable, looking at two cultures living in proximity.
Yeah, it was a fascinating time back then. I mean, they shared this meal together, working together. But why was this not just then a one-off meal? Did it get celebrated the next year and eventually begin to extend to the point where it's this incredible national holiday?
Right. Well, we know that another celebration was held in 1623. The account there says that they by being able to give each family a plot of their land, they were able to see even more increase. So they saw that as God's blessing. And so this became a Plymouth-centric celebration. But then as other people filtered into especially Boston, Massachusetts, and then the whole New England area, Thanksgiving was a regular annual celebration in the towns. It was a town declaration and then the colonial declarations. And so it became a regional celebration. And then once the new nation was put into place, after the American Revolution, after the Constitution, we see national Thanksgivings being called for by Congress and by President George Washington and by President John Adams. Although, remarkably, it was Thomas Jefferson who said, I don't think the president should be making such declarations. And so he stopped the practice. And so there was no national Thanksgiving from 1801 down to the 1860s.
That is phenomenal. So when, how did it pick back up again? Who was sort of the motivation or impetus behind that?
Well, if you think 1860s, this would be President Abraham Lincoln.
Yep.
So during the Civil War, there were lots of ups and downs, but Lincoln said it is appropriate to nationally be giving thanks for the blessings that God has bestowed. And so actually just in my Civil War class yesterday, we read Lincoln's Thanksgiving Day Proclamation from 1863. And so he started that new tradition of calling for an annual Thanksgiving in November, even, that we still have today.
And was there always a direct association even before it was stopped for a temporary period? And then obviously with Abraham Lincoln as well, was it an association that it was a Thanksgiving Day directed towards gratefulness to God specifically?
It was. And that's something I've really appreciated as I've read various Thanksgiving proclamations, is these are in many cases very Christian, using language of thanks not only for bountiful harvest, but for liberty, civil liberty, and religious liberty, they often highlight, also for the blessings of the gospel. And so Thanksgiving was to be celebrated not just among families in the private realm, but in the churches. The churches were to take the lead in demonstrating and giving thanks as central meeting points for the community.
That's fascinating, because we don't really talk much in church about the Thanksgiving Day kind of – it's really been sort of taken over by the football season more than anything else. That gets to be some of our tradition. So the fact it was so tied into gratefulness specifically to God, what do you see today in terms of the expression of it? Is it as much in terms of thankfulness to God, or are we sort of have this invitation to have a spirit of thankfulness somehow?
That's right. I feel like we're encouraged to be thankful vaguely,
mm-hmm.
right, to the natural order or to that kind of benevolent deity that may or may not exist, right? Whereas the origins here in the United States are much more explicitly Christian. And so that's the type of practice that I think we can be nurturing, of Thanksgiving directly to God, recognizing that all good gifts come from Him, and to do this in our churches and even in the private realms that we find ourselves with our family and with our friends. And I think it's that gratitude to God that helps us fight back against the commercialization of Thanksgiving. And so one of the things I definitely protest against is all of the stores saying you should shop on Thanksgiving Day. No, you should pause. You should use it as a family time and a time to really give thanks to God, and not think about stuff. Like, let's put our materialism on hold for just one day to recognize where these gifts come from.
Yeah, certainly when I started opening up the Black Friday mailings from the various retail outlets, there almost gets to be a sense in which I start feeling entitled, that I should be able to get this or that or this or that. And gratitude really is the opposite of entitlement, isn't it? And it's just such an important, almost spiritual discipline that we have an invitation into.
I think that's right, that we need that, recognizing that this isn't just our doing, right? It's not about us, ultimately. And so everything is a gift. The world is a gift. The families we find ourselves are in is a gift, and even our larger national setting is a gift, even with its imperfections. But we have stability and blessings that many other countries and many other individuals do not have. We didn't all do this by ourselves, right? This is a gift, and that comes from God, and so that does create humility and I think also generosity to others. Mm. So it's not only my not receiving things, it's I can give to others. So I think if it creates an attitude not only of generosity but of gratitude but of generosity, that's a really excellent thing.
We have just about a minute left. I'd be curious. I'm mindful that for many people, the holidays is actually a time of pain and troubling. Maybe they've lost somebody and they're thoughtful of that. Is there a way, even in the midst of the loss of life, that we can have alongside of it, not to supplant it, but alongside of it, some gratitude in the midst of loss?
Right. I would hope that would be one extra benefit, that by remembering the gifts of those that we have lost, that would be helpful, right? To recognize that these lives were gifts to us and that we can appreciate for what they offered. Going back to the first Thanksgiving, though, there was a lot of loss there. People had lost spouses. They had lost children, right? There was a 50% death rate from the people who stepped off the Mayflower. So that might be a way to connect back and to say they were giving thanks, even recognizing that it had not turned out the way they had expected. And they carried on and they found chastened joy in the midst of that. And maybe that can be an encouragement to us who are having a hard time this holiday season.
Yeah, it's a great word. Boy, I learned a lot about Thanksgiving today, a lot more in this rich tradition as a country. Really appreciate you coming in and joining us on Faith Radio Mornings this morning.
Great. Delighted to share it.
Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll come back with more here next on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, as your nutrition leader here on Faith Radio Mornings, we thought we'd let you know that a 3-ounce serving of light meat turkey contains about 125 calories, making it lower in calories than the same size serving of ham, which you might be eating today. That chimes in at 139 calories. And of course, if you prefer dark meat turkey, you'll be consuming a hefty 147 calories per serving. So if you're mixing in about 5,000 or 10,000 calories today, you can monitor that depending on the meat that you are eating. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're delighted at this time to be joined on the line by financial advisor Robert Dickey to talk a little bit about how we can avoid overspending during the holiday season. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. Thank you for having me as a part of your program this morning. It's quite an honor.
Well, we love having you on the air here. I know you bring such sound financial advice. And Robert, there is a headline that came out this morning that I had to ask you about when we think about the millennial generation and some of the changes we seem to be seeing in terms of spending habits and emphasis on materialism. I see that Hasbro is introducing Monopoly for millennials with the tagline, "Adulting is hard." And judging by Twitter, many millennials, though, are annoyed by it. Instead of buying up properties, Robert, millennials can buy experiences. They can go to a meditation retreat or a music festival, or they can crash on a friend's couch. And some of the pieces include an actual hashtag with which you can maneuver around the board. So, Robert, is this too generalizing of millennials? What do we see here with this Monopoly game?
No, well, probably it is. And I would imagine that Hasbro's, obviously, they're making a pretty good profit on this game, and good for them on doing that. But they do risk alienating, a very large portion of the population, the millennial population, which, according to recent statistics, is going to be the number two spending power this holiday season, just behind Generation Xers. So, as a person who's hired many millennials, I've got great millennials on my staff at Bonvera, and then also many millennials at Crown. One of the things that I've learned, right, because I like to consult with and learn from the millennial group. They're a very brilliant group of people. They've been maligned many times. There's lots of funny little jokes and so forth that will be said within corporate America about the younger generation coming up because they're a little bit different than Gen X or baby boomers. But by and large, there's a lot of hard-charging, dedicated, hardworking millennials. And they do things a little bit differently, just like Gen X does things a little bit differently than baby boomers. And so I think I would caution Hasbro and others to be somewhat careful about, painting too broadly with a brush.
Robert, you had some really interesting takes on the millennial generation as one of the most empowered spending-wise moving forward here in terms of what we can expect. And yet, there's some challenges for the millennial generation in terms of the kind of income they can expect coming out of college and relative to the cost of living. So we see that millennials are living more and more with their families until the age of 24, 25, 26. Do you see that as a failure, Robert? Because I think that's that stereotype, right? That if you're still living at home at that age, you failed somehow.
Yeah, well, if the situation in 2007, 2008, and the great financial crisis that we went through, not only as a nation, but as a global unit, right, we're living in a global economy. If the situation had been different, then, you might say, hey, this is different from, our previous generations who graduated high school, graduated college, and went into the world and kind of, got started. But what we have to remember is that the millennial generation graduated and came of age during one of the worst economic crises of certainly our lifetime, and some, liken it all the way back to the Great Depression, where companies weren't hiring. rents and home ownership was down considerably. And so they had to navigate. They created a different way of entering adulthood because of some of those things. Now, we've had psychologists and all sorts of people who have done studies on, okay, what happened during the post-9/11 era, helicopter parenting and things like that. But I would say that there was definitely a different economic environment that they entered into that was much different than Gen X, like when I graduated high school in 1993, or my parents who graduated, you know, back in the 50s. So, you know, those are things that we would want to take into consideration. What I'll tell you is of the professional millennials that I'm working with on a day-to-day basis, they are as brilliant, they are as hardworking as I've seen in my career. And, you know, some of them have been, whether they live together in an apartment, some of them may be putting off marriage a little bit later because they've had student loan debt and they've had certain financial concerns. So there are differences of how that generation has kind of integrated into the workforce. But, you know, some of them, you know, as we mentioned earlier, there are some jokes about how millennials can put off adulting until a little bit later in life. But I would say that would be painting with too broad a brush. You just have to kind of cherry pick the segments of the population that you want to analyze. But there certainly have been some financial challenges that they've had to navigate early on in their careers.
And Robert, I know you were referencing a little bit about the student loan debt, and you've also written about that in the past in terms of ways to get through the college university experience without having maybe tens and even hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. What kind of advice do you have for parents that are trying to think, gosh, how can we possibly get our kids through school with the rising cost of education?
Well, it is, if you take a look at all the various surveys, I mean, there's a number of very smart economists. They're looking at the economy, and they think that the student loan debt bubble in the U.S. could potentially be the next big bubble to burst. The rising cost of college education, tuition, and so forth is just astronomical. It's outpacing everything within our economy. In the past, you used to be able to, you know, as a college student, go to college and maybe work during the year, work during the summer, and basically pay for your education. Today, it's virtually impossible, right? So the advice that I'm giving young people who are coming up is, first and foremost, have a plan. Don't use college as this exploratory adventure of like, well, I don't really know what I want to do in life, and so I'm just going to go and take some classes. That's extremely expensive. Know exactly what you want to do if you're going to go to college. The other thing that I would say is not everybody needs to go to college. There are all sorts of trades and crafts and various things that we can get involved in that are going to be very viable in this new economy that are not going to require a four-year college degree. So, again, this is where you would get like a career direct consultant. This is something that Crown Financial Ministries is famous in. They do this all over the world to help people understand how did God design you? What are your unique gifts and skill sets? And let's make sure you're going down that right path.
Robert, I think it's really interesting. Yeah, I was just going to say it's interesting when you reference some other pathways that you can go down. I know, and living overseas a bit, there wasn't this emphasis that everybody had to go to university. And in fact, choices like tech school or the trade program wasn't seen as a junior varsity for somebody who maybe failed any university. It was a recognition of a different pathway. And certainly our country, we are losing people in the trades like, you know, installation and plumbing and electrical work, where I know my father owns a business that does a lot of manufacturing, and he has a hard time finding welders and other people that are very skilled in these areas, and they pay very well.
Very, very well. If you take a look at it, we're behind Germany. Germany has the greatest economy in all of the European Union. They're the number one economy over there, and they have a very robust trade system. Less than 50% of their graduates coming out of high school, their version of high school, go into universities. Many of them have pathways into BMW and Mercedes and all very respected companies over there in a trade network. You know, I'll talk about, you mentioned your father and some of the statistics that you're aware of. I was sitting not long ago next to a CEO of a building and plumbing company that's working in multiple states here in the U.S. He said, Bob, entry level is $70,000 a year for people that I need to hire on my construction sites, and I can't find skilled tradesmen and women who have the requisite skills to be able to start. You know, you don't need a college education. He said that they apprentice people for a few months to be able to have those skills. It's just, so there's ample opportunity out there that's outside the network of colleges where you don't have to take on hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loans to attain it.
It's an incredible invitation for so many, I think, that maybe are wrestling through not wanting to go try to work through a university experience. And Robert, just before the break here, it's not just that, but with more and more college degrees out there, there's a lack of differentiation. And so increasingly people, if they choose the education route, need to even go all through the master's program in order to even have a better opportunity.
That's exactly correct. I was talking with a headhunter out of Atlanta, and she said, Bob, a college degree today has become the high school degree that our parents and grandparents used to have. If you really want to distinguish yourself amongst your peers, you now have to have at least a master's degree. So it's like it's somewhat of a nuclear arms race within the education sphere. And at some point, someone's got to say, stop the insanity, right?
Yeah, you're so right, and that's a part of it. And so if you're spending maybe $160,000 for the first 4 years, then you got to spend another $80,000 for the next three, and you come out of that and you haven't even had a job yet, it's a really tricky experience in our country right now that many people are having to adjust to. We're talking with Robert Dickey this morning, and a lot of great financial advice and conversations. Robert, when we come back from break, I would love to get your perspective on how to best avoid overspending during the holiday season and whether we should wait with our pocketbook until Black Friday opens and do all of our spending on that day. So more with Robert Dickey next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're talking with financial advisor Robert Dickey this morning about how to avoid overspending on the Black Friday holiday season. And Robert, you started a new financial venture recently. Tell us about it.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm really excited to be able to be the new CEO of a company called Bonvera. And we have a partnership with Crown Financial Ministries out of Africa, and we are creating what I believe to be the world-class products of Moringa, and we are purchasing all of that from our partners in Sub-Saharan Africa. We're bringing it into the United States, and we're selling that here within the U.S. marketplace, and it is supporting Foundations for Farming and Crown Stewardship Schools in Sub-Saharan Africa and the teaching and education of entrepreneurs there within the continent. So we're really excited to be partnered with them. And, you know, we represent, our company represents over 20,000 entrepreneurs around the U.S. So we teach and train on biblical principles and also entrepreneurship. And so I'm very excited about the new role that I have and what we're doing here, not only in the U.S. economy, but also supporting my good friends at Crown and what we've been working on over there in Africa for many, many years.
Well, and it sounds like Moringa is sort of a superfood that is unique to the African continent. And with so much emphasis on nutrition and what we eat and antioxidants, this is really has some promise moving forward. I saw, Robert, that there's a study that came out this past week that cancer rates are reduced by upwards of 25% or more simply from eating organic food. And so there's going to be a real industry for this moving forward.
It really is. We find that it's a hot spot in not just the U.S. economy, but the global economy. The Moringa is considered, they call it, for generations, the miracle tree. There's been all sorts of studies of the efficacy of taking this product in various forms. And so we're excited to bring it here to the U.S. And there's right now we're launching, and we're going to have a whole suite of products. So really looking forward to, you know, helping not only entrepreneurs in Africa, but then also helping people here with a world-class great product.
I'd love to have you on and talk in an extended segment about all of that because, again, so many people are interested in what we're putting on our bodies moving forward. Robert, we have a few minutes left, though, to talk about the holiday season coming up, and I know I've got my Amazon Prime card ready. It is almost hot in my pocket right now to spend next week, you know, to try to make my kids happy for the holiday season. Do you have any tips about how to avoid going too far into debt?
Absolutely. How about we start with great advice from Jesus, right? So let's remember what Jesus said in Luke 14:28. He said, "Who builds a tower without first calculating the cost?" And what I'd like everyone to remember as we're heading into this holiday season, let's have a plan. Let's calculate the cost right now. Let's everyone sit down, have a plan on what we want to be able to do. Because the thing that we don't want to have, we don't want to exit the holiday season, the Christmas season in January and February with a Christmas hangover. Because unlike other types of hangovers that kind of maybe dissipate after a few hours, a Christmas hangover, a debt hangover into the new year will linger for a very long time. And so I want to caution people, don't go into debt. Don't overspend throughout the Christmas holiday. So let me give you some quick statistics of what experts are seeing that will be happening in our Christmas season this year. People believe, the experts believe, that there's going to be about a 4.1% increase in overall spending, about $1,000 a person. There's going to be $720 billion spent November and December. December this year in retail. Many of that, 55%, as you just highlighted, you're getting ready with your Amazon Prime card, and I'm going to be doing the exact same, but 55% will be on online sales and some retail, the store sales. 86% of Americans plan on purchasing gifts. But here's the thing that's really concerning for me. When we know that a vast majority of the American population don't have $1,000 in a savings account for an emergency, 68% of Americans say they're going to use some of their savings for purchases, and 56% say they're going to finance their purchases with credit cards. And this is very, very dangerous because the average person coming out of the holidays, I mean, if you pay what they're planning on financing, it's going to take upwards of 5 months to pay that off. And many people, if they pay the minimums, could be paying off their credit card balance for up to 3 years and have finance charges of an extra $500 to $1,000. So I really want to caution people, if you enter the holiday season with a plan and say, look, this is what we can afford, and stick with that plan, you're going to have a much more enjoyable January and February and March as you head into the new year.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important advice, especially when you think that we might be paying something off over 3 years, because, Robert, my understanding is that Christmas comes every year, and so we will just start in that cycle again and again each year if we don't get out of it right away, right?
Oh, and it just adds up. The debt just continues to snowball. And so one of the things that we've taught at Crown for the last three, four decades is to have the reverse snowball, the debt snowball, which is paying off your debt, getting out of debt, and paying in cash. Larry Burkett and Chuck Bentley are famous for talking about the various ways in which we can have a different mindset with our finances, how we can craft and create a plan, pay down those debts, then pay with cash, and so that we don't have that type of stress. I mean, that's a stress that lingers. It impacts families, and it can impact families for years and years and years.
Talking with Robert Dickey this morning. Robert, before we run, as we think about Thanksgiving next week, and what is something that you would splurge on for the Thanksgiving Day table? What do you say, this has to be here, it has to be some food that I'm going to eat next week?
Well, Thanksgiving, for Thanksgiving, my family, it's always the turkey. It's always Brandy, my wife, does an amazing job of having the spread. So I'll actually splurge a little bit for a really nice turkey, a little bigger turkey than my family. I've got six children, so I need a fairly large turkey. But we'll get even a bigger turkey than we probably need, because I love having extra slices of that turkey meat in the refrigerator that we get to eat for, you know, a couple of days following the Thanksgiving Day feast. But my wife always does an amazing job, and I'm super blessed. I tell you what, the holiday season for me, it's all about family. Forget about the gifts and all that type of stuff. Just spending time and relaxing with my wife and my six children, and that's just a blessing in of itself. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, no, that's great, Robert. I have five kids, same thing, and I'm always looking on Amazon Prime to see if they'll send me a couple turkeys within 2 hours, because we do seem to run out with so many kids. Hey, thanks for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings. Love the advice. Love the feedback. I know our listeners really benefit, too, as we try to think through some of these financial issues. So have a great holiday week next week, Robert, and we'll talk with you soon.
You too. Take care. God bless everybody.
And we'll wrap up our Thanksgiving Day show next on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, thanks for listening on this Thanksgiving Day. I certainly hope it's a great day ahead for all of you, whether you are celebrating with family or friends, whether you're grieving over the loss, whatever situation in which you find yourself. I hope it is a wonderful day that has some measure of gratitude ahead. Thought we would end our Thanksgiving Day program with an ancient prayer from the first century church that was a prayer of Thanksgiving that we can take with us on our day today. It says that we give you thanks, Holy Father, for your holy name, which you have caused to dwell in our hearts, and for the knowledge and faith and immortality that you have made known to us through Jesus, your servant. To you be glory forever. For you, Almighty Master, have created all things for your name's sake, and you gave food and drink for humans to enjoy, so that they might give you thanks. But to us, you have also graciously given spiritual food and drink and eternal life through your servant. Above all, Father, we give thanks to you because you are mighty, and so to you be glory forever. I think those are some great words to carry with us into Thanksgiving Day. It's one of the hallmarks of the Christian faith that we are grateful for the gifts that we've been given, both in this life, even when there is absence in this life, because we also know that the fullness of the gifts that await us in the afterlife will create a kingdom that knows no end. It is that kingdom of which we're a part now and which will always be part of our future. So happy Thanksgiving from everyone here at Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.